slamming his side after that game. And joining me to talk about those two fixtures and the upcoming fixtures this evening as Manchester United head to Germany, take on Leverkusen. And of course, Manchester City look to take on bottom of their group, pointless Pilsen, is a man who's going to tidy up all things for us surrounding the Champions League at the moment. It's Mr. Will Tidy from Bleacher Report joining us here on World Football Daily. Will, how are you doing, mate? It's a pleasure to have you on the show today, mate.
I like what you did there, Oliver. I like what you did. Good thanks. It's been a busy week, hasn't it? And then more games to come.
Plenty of games to come. Plenty of games to talk about as well. Will, first and foremost, so as an Englishman out in the US of A, how are you enjoying playoff fever in Major League Soccer? Do you find yourself getting sucked in a little bit more than you do with the regular season out there? Or is it very much kind of a, well, it's just Major League Soccer to an Englishman whose, you know, preferred game, I'm sure, is the Premier League?
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I think any sport where it gets to a playoff situation I get into, I find myself pretty riveted by the NFL playoffs, the NBA playoffs. I mean, the NBA last round of playoffs was some of the best sport I've ever seen. I mean, the World Series was good. I think with the MLS, it does pique my interest more when it gets to the playoffs. I still struggle to get really excited by it, I've got to be honest. I do follow it. I do enjoy watching the teams, but unfortunately, you can't deny that when you're watching these games, there's a lack of the kind of quality that you see and we're used to in the European leagues, unfortunately. But I think that, you know, gradually is improving for sure.
And Will, we mentioned it earlier in the show as well. Do you think, just one last thing on Major League Soccer, because we do need to talk Champions League with you, but this new Beckham franchise that's being proposed down in Miami and looking set to probably end up going through, I'm sure they wouldn't turn down having David Beckham back associated with Major League Soccer, but the fact that his family won't be moving there, do you think that affects how involved Beckham's going to be and therefore could be detrimental to this franchise?
I think it has to have an impact. I mean, he's not going to be there every week, but then a lot of these owners that we have in the Premier League are not there every week, are they? And I think as long as Beckham is heavily involved at the outset and makes himself a regular visitor to Miami, which is, you know, not a dreadful place to go and visit once or twice a month, then I think, you know, he can play a big role. We see it with the New York Cosmos. You know, they've got a lot of people involved there and have done along the way that, you know, we don't expect Pelé to be at every game or involved in their front office stuff. And Eric Cantona was involved for a little while. And you need these ambassadorial figures, I think, to draw talent to your team. That's where Beckham's big role is going to come in, I think, in the recruitment of players associated, you know, with Beckham. I think he's obviously got a huge pull. He's got a lot of friends in the game. You know, whether he's there every day of the week, I don't think it's a necessity.
I wonder if he'll be able to get Ryan Giggs to do one more year just away from Manchester and out in Miami to enjoy the sun. Will, we do want to talk Champions League football with you. And I think talking of foreign ownership, there's no better place to start, really, than the game changers in the Premier League that were Chelsea. Roman Abramovich's side, of course, losing last night to Basel in a game that Chelsea just never seemed to look comfortable. And Basel took the game to them. What did you make of Mourinho's comments once again slamming a Chelsea poor performance rather than hiding behind the, well, we're still through, we're okay? It's quite damning for him to be coming out two times in the last month or so with this sort of remark.
Yeah, I think first time round at Chelsea, he really instilled a level of a mentality there which took them to the title, took them to the double. And it was, you know, this is our time, I am your manager, and you need to go out there and play for me. Now, that isn't quite happening, or maybe he's working with some different types of players. You know, Chelsea is a different team than it was even when Mourinho was there, sort of the mid-2000s. And I think he's got different personalities to work with. He's not seeing the blood and guts that he wants to see, I don't think, right now. And maybe this is, you know, Mourinho's always thinking, and maybe he thinks right now the easiest way for him to motivate his players is to say things publicly, and that will, you know, effectively threaten their reputation more than, you know, a talking down in the dressing room. I don't know. I mean, they've blown hot and cold, haven't they? And they still, to me, they are crying out for a striker. And with Eto injured yesterday, you know, they're going to sign someone in January, aren't they? Surely.
Well, this is the thing with Chelsea as well. As you say, Eto out with a very nasty looking injury last night. Torres comes in, but can they just survive with just Fernando Torres? Will we see, Will, after he's been so impressive up at Everton now, arguably a step up from West Brom, will we see a recall for Romelu Lukaku? And will he get the opportunity to actually show Chelsea what he can do this year?
I think most people would say yes. I mean, we run a column with Stan Collymore and I've heard several people talk on this. I mean, Stan Collymore can't believe that Lukaku was released in the first place because, you know, looking at the attributes he brings as a striker, he very much fits the mould that Mourinho likes. He's strong, direct, quick, can hold the ball up. He's a natural finisher in the air. And I just wonder if Mourinho will be too stubborn to bring him back. And also plays into that, of course, whether he has a player in mind, someone he's perhaps worked with before that he'll go after. But I do think they'll sign a striker in January. I don't think there's any question of that.
It's looking desperate. The word crisis has been thrown around a number of clubs at a number of different times. But with Chelsea scraping their way through the Champions League, does it just avert that word from being thrown around once again around Stamford Bridge? Because, as you said earlier, it doesn't look like Mourinho's got the men that he wants to be playing with, and it's not looking settled. But is it a crisis still yet?
I don't think so. I mean, I think the result at home against West Brom was disappointing for Chelsea fans, and they lost that first game, didn't they, at home in the Champions League. I think they're through, and then, you know, we look back to I think, you know, Manchester United, a good example, the last few years haven't been that convincing in the Champions League group stage at all. Yet United still won the title last season. I mean, I think we have to give Mourinho a certain amount of time, maybe this one season, just to sort of get his thing going again there. But they've blown hot and cold, and there's been games where they've looked very vulnerable at the back in central defence, just not as strong as you'd expect.
Which is almost surprising, Will, because people are calling for John Terry to return to the England squad, yet at Chelsea, as you say, that centre-back pairing isn't looking too great at the moment. Do you agree with the fact that John Terry should be recalled to the England squad, considering how poorly Chelsea look in that centre-back pairing?
No, I don't. Not for a second, because I think John Terry is still a strong centre-back, and on his day, like Rio Ferdinand, when he's in the right mood and in the right shape, and his very sharpest, then he's still up there. But England don't need that back because it's just a disruption, it's just a distraction. And I think Roy Hodgson has got no intention of bringing him back because what England need to do is just focus on the players they've got and the future that they've got. This World Cup should be very much a building exercise. England aren't going to win the World Cup in Brazil. So there's no point putting a plaster over a wound, really, in terms of bringing Terry back. Let's give the younger players a chance to start at a World Cup finals and then hope in 2 years' time that someone like Phil Jones or Smalling or whoever it might be is then that much maturer for it. I mean, that's what we've done in historically speaking, given these young central defenders a chance. I remember seeing Sol Campbell when we gave him that run at the 98 World Cup, and, you know, really lent to big things for him.
Will, from one London club that could possibly be turning into crisis to another one that is just finding its rhythm. 29 seconds it took Jack Wilshere to score his first last night, added a second as well. For him personally, with the niggly injury that he's still obviously carrying at the moment and still not 100% fit with the start of this season, how important is a brace against Marseille in the Champions League for confidence, for reassurance for Arsenal as well, that Jack can still produce the business?
Yeah, very pleased for Jack Wilshere last night. We had a reporter, James McNicholas, who was at the game at the Emirates, and he was saying that a lot of people don't necessarily agree with Wilshere being pushed out on the right-hand side, but he proved very effective there last night. He's got this ability to cut in from the flank that he really worked well. I mean, it was showed obviously most evident in his goal early on. And then also gave him some freedom to move around. I think with Wilshere, injuries just continue to sort of just break his rhythm. So it's all about just maintaining his fitness. And maybe that comes down to Arsene Wenger using him very cleverly. And I think even when he gets to what Wenger considers to be peak fitness, I think he needs to just not have him playing 90 minutes every game. You know, be very careful because he's obviously susceptible. And maybe he needs a couple of years just to get that base fitness back so he's not so vulnerable.
This Arsenal front three, as you say, people have criticised Wilshere being out on that right-hand side, but does it remind you of the Manchester City front four from the start of the season that they won the title? Because that used to rotate around, and those front four of Dzeko, Aguero, Silva, and the choice of whoever they wanted to throw into that fourth spot, usually Carlos Tevez, used to just move and float around the pitch. Do you see that with Arsenal, that although Wilshere's out on the right, it's so fluid, these players aren't stuck rigidly in their positions?
Yeah, I do. I think they've done really well in that sense. And obviously, without Oliver Giroud, I think is a class striker. I don't think he's a world-class striker. And I think what they've done really well, Arsenal, is Mesut Ozil initially was inspirational for them and really a game changer in those first few games. I think his influence has diluted slightly over the last few games, but Arsenal have still created enough elsewhere that they've made up for that. So I think the question for Arsenal is, yes, they do have this sort of fluid forward line, but do they have the second wave behind that? If Giroud was injured, Wilshere, I know, is prone to be injured. I mean, Theo Walcott coming back is a big plus for them. That gives them an extra option. And, you know, more and more we move away from this idea of necessarily having to have these focal point strikers, I suppose. I mean, Barcelona have relied on just having one or half a one for a couple of years. So I don't know. Arsenal's such a fascinating situation. Can they win the title? Yes. If they can continue playing this way, they can, yes.
And of course, barring injuries as well. And if that defensive line can hold firm, two players who have been obviously under criticism over the last couple of years or so, Per Mertesacker, and of course, goalkeeper Wojciech Szczęsny, who many thought was going to be replaced at some point in the last 18 months or so by Arsene Wenger. These two have both defied everybody's opinions and started to play to their peak ability. Mertesacker's not getting caught out despite the lack of pace, and Szczęsny's producing some big saves. Is it just confidence with these two? Are they actually growing, do you think, Will?
Yeah, I think Mertesacker is someone that Arsenal fans keep telling me is the leader. He's the natural leader for this team. And once you start telling somebody that, it's almost like this. I remember, you know, growing up playing football as a kid, it was, you'd hear a lot of coaches would do the same thing. They'd take the most sort of not necessarily disruptive, but a player that maybe they thought needed some focusing, and they'd make him captain. And I think with Mertesacker, that's sort of happened at Arsenal. I think the responsibility has come on him to be the leader in the dressing room, and I think he's relishing it. And, you know, with Szczęsny, always struggle to pronounce that one.
not a problem.
Yeah, I mean, he's just quietly got on with it, hasn't he? And it's funny because for ages we were saying, Arsenal need a keeper, Arsenal need a keeper, Arsenal need a keeper. And now no one's saying it right now because he's doing his job. And he's, you know, his defence is working well ahead of him. He's feeling confident. Goalkeeping and striking, of course, are two just areas of the pitch where so much is confidence, really. And he's high. Arsenal are high right now. You only ever won thumping away from being down again, though, I suppose.
I hope that's not a breaking story. You don't mean they're high, but you know they're optimistically high rather than anything else, Will. I hope that's what you're saying to us anyway. We have some Champions League football, of course, tonight, the second night this week, and that's the luxury that Champions League football brings for us now. Manchester United taking on Bayer Leverkusen. Will, you are the man for all things Manchester United. Against Leverkusen on the road, as you said earlier, aside that United tend to struggle in these group stages, is this going to be a bad night for Moyes? Is the pressure going to be right back on again?
I think so. I think the pressure's on to go there without Van Persie. I don't think Vidic has travelled, so it'll be interesting to see the lineup that he picks. They haven't announced their team will come out any minute, I would think. I don't know. I think United actually, you know, although they're not as convincing as we'd like, and, you know, they let Cardiff back into the game at the weekend, they're not losing games at the moment, and that brings with it a growing confidence game on game. They're not particularly playing that well, I don't think, as a unit. But, you know, if you look at the chances they've made in the Champions League, not very impressive. I think they're way down on the shots on target. You know, of all the teams in the group stage, they're in the sort of bottom 5 or 10 teams for shots on target. So that they need to work on. But I think defensively, maybe starting to come together a little bit.
If they don't get it done tonight, it puts an awful lot of pressure on the arrival of Donetsk, especially if results go Donetsk's way against Sociedad this evening. I mean, would you start calling this a must point? Maybe not a must win, but at least a draw has to come from this.
Yeah, I think so. I think you've got to go away game like this and you've got to just not be breached and just hope to come away with a draw or a tight win. But if it comes down to the final game, that's part of the course. I mean, if you're going to make pros in the Champions League, you've got to win. You've got to be winning games at home against teams like Shakhtar. And, you know, if United aren't capable of doing that and taking on that challenge, then, you know, they have no place in the last 16, really. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. We're starting to get into the time of the season, aren't we, where, you know, these games start to really matter now. And, you know, the great game, of course, is going to be Napoli. Arsenal's going to be a fascinating game. You know, I think Napoli need to win 3-0. So when you get scenarios like that, then you really see these teams that we've hyped up. You know, all this talk about Napoli being potential European champions under Benitez, Italian champions. Now it's time to, you know, okay, let's see what you've really got, because now push is coming to shove. And you know, same for Moyes, I think. We'll see the mettle of his team in the next sort of 3 or 4 weeks, I think.
Finally, the other team in Manchester, arguably United's noisy neighbours, Manchester City. They're already through, of course, Will. For you, though, Joe Hart back in the squad tonight. How big a game? There's a lot of importance riding on Joe Hart's performance this evening. Maybe not for the team, but on an individual basis.
Yeah, I think there's so much attention on Hart, and a goalkeeper can change their fortune so quickly. I think people are, it's funny, I think people are actually ready. England fans in particular at Wembley were behind him, it seemed like. I think England fans realise and know that Joe Hart is the best goalkeeper in the country, and they want him to be in confident form heading into a World Cup. I think Manchester City fans feel the same. He is their best goalkeeper on a skills basis, and he's probably the best in the best two or three goalkeepers in the Premier League on a skills basis. It's just going to take two or three big games for him, some big saves, some clean sheets, and then suddenly we start to say it was a blip. But, you know, at the same time, another couple of bad games, a costly mistake tonight, the next round, I don't know. I mean, it becomes more difficult as you get, you know, they're not going to loan him out, so Pellegrini says. So he's just got to make it happen. It's probably good to have some pressure on a player, to be honest. And maybe that's part of the problem, that you get too complacent that the place is yours with City and with England. And Hart's been told in the last few weeks that's not the case. We'll see how he reacts.
Is any of it slightly patronising, Hart being put in tonight? I mean, if we were saying if Pantilimon was playing for the first time after Hart had been in for a while, we'd be saying, oh, he's just giving him a chance, you know, giving him a stretch those legs against a side like Pilsen who don't have any points. Is it now that situation for Joe Hart this evening?
Well, I think it's intelligent management, really, because Manuel Pellegrini is not taking a risk by playing him in this game. But at the same time, he is giving him the opportunity to impress him. I mean, basically, he's saying to him, whether he said this to him word for word or he's saying, you go out there and impress me tonight, because the shirt is there for yours to be won. And you're going to need to be, you know, perfect tonight. And of course, if he doesn't have a lot to do in goal in terms of making saves, there's still a point to be made in terms of his distribution, I think, and just his general communication with his defence and what kind of air he's putting across, really.
It's a big night for Manchester City in terms of establishing themselves. Do they still need to get a big win just to show that they're still big players, finally, Will, in the Champions League?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, they hammered Tottenham at the weekend. That was a big enough statement for me. I think, you know, we saw with Barcelona at Ajax last night, these games don't really matter once you're already through. You know, coming top or second in the group can make a difference, but, you know, we all know that we'll get some very good teams that come second in their groups. So, you know, either way, I think more of a case of being intelligent now. City, the chance to sort of bring a few players off fairly early with an eye on the Premier League. They're into the next round. They don't want to sacrifice winning a group, but at the same time, not massive pressure, as Barca showed last night.
Well, we're not long away from the Champions League games tonight, so we will let you get away and get on with watching them and covering them on that beautiful site, Bleacher Report, in the way that you do so well. Thank you so much for joining us again, once again, Will. And we look forward to catching up with you very soon indeed, my man. And enjoy Thanksgiving as well tomorrow.
Thank you. Appreciate that. You have a good weekend, Oliver. Thank you.
Cheers, Will. Will Tidy there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Champions League football this evening from that English point of view. We were running through the Champions League games a little earlier in the show from last night. And, of course, Chelsea having that loss against Basel, a side who just love beating English teams in the Champions League, that's for sure. And of course, we will be getting a look at the Champions League games coming up tonight that don't involve English teams. And we can have that right now, because joining me on the line is the editor and writer of the Kickabout blog here on World Football Daily, a very good friend of the show, a very good footballing friend of Rafa as well. It's Gio. Gio, mate, how are you? Welcome to World Football Daily's airwaves. I hope you're having a tip-top afternoon today, or morning, should I say, out there in Los Angeles. Man, how are you doing, Gio?
I'm living the dream. You're just living the dream. Currently working at the Total Wine here in Orange County. So
you're
all the alcoholics here today.
you're basically mimicking Rafa then, because Rafa's always, you know, another day in paradise. Your signing's always going to be living the dream out here in Orange County. And I get so jealous of you guys out in California when I'm stuck here in bloody miserable, wet, cold England, and you're there probably just maxing it out in the back, out the back of your shop, with a beer in hand, I'm sure, and sun bathing down on you, even though it's November. Gio, mate, Champions League night as well. I'm too jealous of you right now. Too jealous of you, mate. How did you enjoy last night's Champions League action, mate? Because there was a number of thrills and spills, as we were talking with Will Tidy a moment ago about, especially that. That Chelsea defeat, I mean, it brings a smile to anybody who isn't a Chelsea fan watching them go down against Basel yesterday, doesn't it?
Oh, in the past, this whole group stage, Basel seems to be the bane of Chelsea this year, and it seems to be total revenge for what happened in the Europa League for last season.
Do you think that spurred them on at all, mate?
Maybe, perhaps it's more like what goes around comes around for what happened last year in the Europa League. I thought Basel played phenomenal against Chelsea and somehow got robbed in that game.
It was kind of like a Chelsea, oh, we're not too fussed about the Europa League, but sod it, if we're going to win something, we might as well win this, against the Basel side that came out fighting for it and really looked like they were desperate to get their hands on that bit of silverware. And I think a lot of people really did kind of, their hearts bled for them. But this year, this is meant to be Mourinho's return. This is meant to be a stronger side than it was under Rafa Benitez, because the great one is back. Do you, we said with Will, you know, is it a crisis or not? That word keeps getting flown about. Do you think it is going to take this long and even longer for Mourinho to get his grasp? Are we going to see a lot of changes, do you think, come January with this Chelsea side?
Well, for the past, how long has it been since, like, he's been in England? For like 5-6 years, he's been gone. So it takes a man a little bit of time to adjust to the pace and the physicality of England again. As it is, he was dealing with the harsh press over with La Liga, and apparently he was loved in the Italian media, and then he comes back home to England, which is apparently his home, but everyone gives him so much of a, how would I say this, so much credit for what he did at Chelsea before, that they just want to love him and the character that he is, and he brings out. It's just, people are asking questions now that when they should have been asking questions a little while ago, but also they should be asking questions of the league, because the top six right now, but current league status for the Premier League.
Well, I think the English media love having him back because he gives them soundbite after soundbite. It was very rare for him to, or for managers even, to come out and really slam their sides. Mourinho's done it on a number of occasions already this season, let alone in the past, and obviously causes controversy wherever he goes, which is obviously why the media enjoy him being back here in the UK and kind of getting stuck in with his, maybe not bringing out special one, and I don't think anybody thought the happy one was one that was going to, a soundbite that was going to last for as long as the special one did, that's for sure. And it's not lasted. He's not looking happy. Do you think we're actually going to see him getting a smile back on his face anytime soon? I think it's going to be a lot tougher than he expected coming back. I think he kind of expected coming back to Chelsea, great old memory. It's like going back to an ex-girlfriend, Gio. I mean, I don't know if you've ever done that before, but have you ever gone back to the ex-girlfriend and realised, actually, there are some reasons why this didn't work out. She's kind of crazy. Probably shouldn't have done this. But you remember wistfully that ex-girlfriend as, oh, she was so great, wasn't she? Because you think about, like, the good times. I just wonder if there's that syndrome going on with Chelsea and Mourinho at the moment.
It's like the moment when you figure out, like, did I really miss something from her, or was there something special from that one? I don't know. Why do I keep thinking about her, you know, at the moment?
So you have been there, Gio. We're learning something new about you already. You have dealt back with the ex-girlfriend.
Did I just give something up that was more precious than what I understood? That's like the question with Chelsea. It seems so off, but there's always going to be some rocky patches when you find that person or some sort. At least so we're told.
Yeah,
that's how you deal with through those rocky patches. When Sir Alex Ferguson was at United, there was always a bump here and there. And it takes at least a year or two, at least soon study with the Premier League to at least acclimate to how the pace is, how the whole campaign works with domestic leagues. You have the Carling Cup, which is now the Capital One Cup, the FA Cup, and the Champions League, which they're all pursuing. It's going to be a little bit more stressful than what they usually deal with.
Now, Gio, I want to switch gears slightly, move away from Chelsea and move away from the Champions League for the moment. In Major League Soccer...
Thank you, I felt a little sick talking about Chelsea.
Who would you support, Gio? Who's your side there, mate?
I've been following Man United since 1996, I was eight.
Oh, so, dear.
Yeah, it's okay. I've always had a love for Gary Pallister and the way he stuck his foot in on the defense, playing as a defender.
Pallister and Bruce, imagine those two in the modern game these days. I mean, Steve Bruce is overweight now, but I think he was about the same size and shape that he was back then, kind of thing. And Pallister as well. Such an awkward looking guy, big, bulky, but almost too big and bulky. But back in the day, though, was such a good centre back pairing as well.
It was a massive pairing, but the question is now, would it survive the speed today of our football now? It's so quick.
They never would. But I tell you what, United would take anything to have a centre back pairing with that chemistry. They knew each other's games.
Very awful.
Would you take Pallister and Bruce back over, say, a Rio Ferdinand and Johnny Evans pairing right about now?
It would depend on the timing and the year. I'll take probably Gary Pallister right now, back when he was in 1996-95 to take over Rio, because, you know, he's 35 at the moment, 36.
Yeah.
Those old legs, it's the old, my personal opinion, it's the old legs of United that are finally starting to wither away, which we only have right now is Rio Ferdinand and Ryan Giggs, which I can see why you'll keep them around as like the elder statesmen, the men that have been there already. They have experience. They know what to do to get through game in, game out.
Mm.
But the question lies, is their physicality, are they able to do it? Is their body able to handle it?
Well, Rio's
the mileage on Giggs and Rio alone is a lot of miles on those legs.
Rio's intelligent enough to be able to read a game, but that step is slowly catching him out on his read, because he's never been that good, really, with positioning himself. What he does is he reads the game so well that he's able to position himself rather badly in areas around the pitch, but because he can see where the ball's going, he gets there with enough time. Now, without that pace in him, with that extra half step or so, he is getting caught out more and more. We were talking, obviously, with Will about the centre-back pairings of Chelsea. United, though, that there isn't those... I mean, you're a United fan. You obviously continue to hear about the Nicky Butt, Paul Scholes, Giggs all coming through at the same time and all that story that United Academy clings on to. But coming out of the Academy at the moment, I mean, we've said it a number of times on this show about Johnny Evans, Smalling. Everybody just started saying, Phil Jones, Johnny Evans, Chris Smalling, these are going to be great players. Right, even before, you know, they'd even set foot, obviously, in the Premier League. Now they're doing it, and it's a little underwhelming. As a United fan, I mean, does that worry you at all, Gio?
It's more than underwhelming. It's rather frustrating. I remember conversing with other fans about it last year. The question should still arise, and my personal opinion, certain players that are a little bit weak, that are evidently weak, apparently one-foot Ashley, I think, needs to be shown the door immediately.
Come on. Ashley Young's got more than
example for Phil Jones, Smalling, and Evans. See what happened to him? He messed up. He messed around. Didn't take it seriously. And this could happen to you. You guys have the potential to be great, but you're screwing it up.
Come on, Ashley Young has more than a right foot. He's brilliant off the high board as well. Gets, you know, perfect tens every time he hits that pool. No splash or anything like that. He's an expert diver. Come on, Gio.
Give him one little whisper into his ear and somehow he'll fall.
Yeah.
It doesn't have some kind of strength, it is. I don't know what it is about Ashley. It's frustrating to see how a player with such great technique can be such an underwhelming player over time, and occasionally frustrating.
It's embarrassing as well. I mean, I've watched games when, Sheffield Wednesday players, Milan players, when they go down easy. Balotelli has done it this year. And you do. I hate coming onto a show and talking about Milan when Balotelli's done some of his antics and players have been going down easy. Because to talk about it, you always say, you know, I would never have it in my squad. But when somebody does it, there's always a part of you as a fan that's like, well, you know, you've got us a free kick or whatever. But the fact that they've done it by cheating, it really kind of takes an edge out of you. And as I say, it's embarrassing for the fans to kind of have to look at it in that way. Diving's got. Do you think retrospective punishments for diving need to be brought in, Gio? How do you see it?
Well, to be honest, diving is all part of perspective. I'm sure, being a United fan, we used to have the issue with dealing with Cristiano Ronaldo being a diver and a flopper back when he was younger and less bulky. And you had to live with it, seeing the fact that he was a flopper, but he was just, you could tell that he was great. And that's how you see today with players like Luis Suarez. He's an out-and-out winner. He just wants to win, and he will do anything that matters to win, even in the case of putting his hand up in the air to block a goal, a potential goal that was going to be in for the World Cup.
Yeah.
If you have to see the negative part of it to address it, which is the cheating part of it, But you have to see the beauty of the mentality of this guy will do what it takes to win.
Well,
even though it's negative, you get to see both sides, I guess.
I do maintain that had it been an English player doing that in the World Cup kind of quarterfinal, anybody would have said, oh, John Terry, what an English hero. You know, he was willing to sacrifice himself and take that red card to get England through to the next round. The fact it was Suarez, everybody kind of went, ah, he's a nutter from South America. We're going to berate him for it instead. The English press obviously jumping on Suarez's incident, the handball incident, of course, in that World Cup 2010. Gio, I need to ask you something as well. Before we get, I want to talk a little bit Major League Soccer with you, especially as you're kind of on ground level out there in the US to discuss all things MLS. But have you seen the story today about the stadium in Sao Paulo? A crane buckling, tragically three people killed, but taking down part of the stadium as well for that will be hosting the opening game of the World Cup. I mean,
I haven't seen that article yet, but I'm half South American myself. My father from Ecuador, and I'll tell you, I'm not surprised because a lot of those stadiums in Brazil, Argentina, are very, very old and in the middle of renovation.
And this, I was going to say, this has happened during the renovation process, and it's not the renovation process for the ground once again. This is the World Cup's opening ground. You know, the opening game of the World Cup is going to be played here, and it's falling to pieces once again. I mean, it's just another long line. Do you think we should be looking at a contingency plan for Brazil 2014? And if so, where would you land that World Cup, Gio?
Well, of course, there should always be a contingency plan. For the amount of money that's invested in the actual event of a World Cup, there should always be a possible contingency plan just in case for something like this to occur. And, of course, I'll show my American bias that I want here in the States. Of course, it could be easier for me to observe. the States would be nice because it'll show the proof that MLS is working here, and it shows that there is a lot of nice growing potential in a lot of areas of the United States, like Portland can actually support a nice atmosphere for a World Cup, Seattle as well. Bits and parts of Texas, California, they will always pack it for a World Cup. In the United States, World Cup fever catches. It's the competition of the World Cup catches. It's like an infection, zombie plague, and just spreads for that whole month. It could definitely make money here in the States, but it would be a pity to see a country like Brazil lose the World Cup, a country that was supposedly lives and breathes the game of soccer, and they lose it to the States. It would be kind of an insult for them.
Yeah, I'm sure it would, and I'm sure everybody is wanting to see the Samba style. I mean, we've spoken about how some of these companies like Adidas and Nike have started producing things that are so associated with Brazil for the World Cup, new boot designs and all that stuff. I'm sure they'd be pretty cheesed off to suddenly be having to think about advertising campaigns for the United States and whatnot. You bring us perfectly into Major League Soccer, Gio, and I have to say, the Portland Timbers, to me, you know me. I've got my Timbers soft side, that's for sure. But losing,
I'm soft for the Timbers too. It's a good reason why to be soft for them. They're a great, hard, and a hardworking team.
And not only a hardworking team, but you think how far they've come in such a short period of time as a franchise as a whole. And I think any team in Major League Soccer has to be jealous of that atmosphere that's up in the Pacific Northwest. It's a game changer for Major League Soccer. The attention, the emotion that they put into it. I think if more clubs could replicate that around the US, Major League Soccer would be booming. And do you think it's a tragedy for the game? For Major League Soccer as a whole, the fact that the Timbers weren't able to get past RSL, and instead we have Real Salt Lake and Sporting Kansas City, as opposed to the Dynamo, one of the biggest franchises, most well-known franchises, especially after the last 2 years when Major League Soccer's worldwide attention has kind of grown so much more. And the Timbers, such a well-supported, emotionally charged franchise, it's those two that are missing out. And maybe, for business terms, that might have been better for Major League Soccer, do you think?
It's actually a good thing I would see, because you see these soccer towns that are thriving, as in Salt Lake City, who only has a basketball team to go to. You see, like towns like that, you see soccer prevail, and actually Portland's a good example. Kansas City is a nice example too. That stadium is just rocking when they play their games in there. I see a massive benefit to having Sporting Kansas City playing an actual decent franchise and tough franchise team as the Real Salt Lake. You have the newcomer fighting the person who's defending has been defending certain titles for a certain amount of time. It's actually, even though the Timbers aren't there, the underdog and small team representation is still there with Sporting Kansas City. It's a pity that the Timbers aren't there, but I think they'll be there again eventually. I've actually had the privilege of going up to Portland to witness the game. Actually, the Timbers versus Seattle, the last game of the Cascadia Cup. And my goodness, the atmosphere is beyond. It's lively. It's electric. It's contagious. And before going into the stadium, the people are lined up to get there. People that don't have tickets are on the side, like basically panhandling for tickets. It's a thriving economy, basically, an atmosphere in Portland and both Kansas City.
We need to get off, Gio, and get to the Champions League football tonight. We will definitely be back with you next week for sure. Of course, World Football Daily taking Thursday, which of course is Thanksgiving. And we're actually taking the Friday off as well here at WFD. But Gio, before you go, what game are you going to be watching when you get back from work? Sit down. What have you got recorded on the DVR for Champions League football tonight? There's plenty of decent games. It's a tough choice.
Lots of games, actually, Juice. I have them all recording, actually, but the first one I'm probably going to plop down and see my Red Devils. Oh. I'm going to watch my Red Devils take on Leverkusen today.
Are you not nervous? I mean, going to Germany, United aren't great on the road in the Champions League, and if you don't win, if you lose, and Donetsk win, puts an awful lot on Shakhtar's arrival at Old Trafford next round.
To be honest, as a United supporter, in the middle of a transition year, we have to think in reality. A good plus this year for the team is to go somewhat far in the Champions League. You have to kind of scrub it off a little bit because Moyes is untested. This is his first Champions League altogether. So as far as he's gone so far, I'm pretty happy for how he's achieved a certain success right now in Champions League. Going to Germany is going to be tough, granted. But the way Moyes has always instilled in Everton before he went to United was a tough defensive team, and that's what I'm happy to see at United. But at the moment, they seem like to be missing that identity, but they're trying to find it. And for the Champions League, it's kind of harsh to see like what they're going to do. But to be honest, as a United supporter, you have to think in reality right now. To scrub off Champions League is harsh to say, but it's a reality and a possibility we have to live with. If we can get far in Champions League and past the 16, that's a good plus for Moyes. He can build upon that. But we need to look to the domestic to stay in top four and maybe make a run in for FA Cup or Capital One Cup. And to build upon that for Moisey.
Gio, we love your writing here on worldfootballdaily.com, and I'm going to plug it once again. The Kickabout blog, worldfootballdaily.com, is where you can find Gio's writing. We love having you on the show as well, my man. We thank you so much for joining us. It is a shame that you're another Red Devil joining us here on World Football Daily, and another man who's going to be promoting all things David Moyes. I guarantee by the end of the season, you'll be chanting.